Ladies and gentlemen, in his few remaining broadcasts, Hendrik Willem van Loon will try to sum up the ideas which lay spread throughout his talks of the last 4 months. Ladies and gentlemen, we give you Hendrik Willem van Loon.
Well, the deed has been done. And if you happen to be a stamp collector, you can now draw two little red lines at the end of your pages, covered with the pretty brief marker of the old Austrian monarchy and republic. That chapter has been closed for good and all. Austria has become part of the German Reich. Imperial Vienna has become a small and out-of-the-way little provincial hole. Efficiency will take the place of the happy old carelessness. The waltz tune of Johann Strauss will soon be silenced by the more martial strains of the goose-step, and the name of Horst Wessel will replace that of Franz der Kaiser in the national anthem. Papa Haydn, Franz Schubert and Mozart, and Beethoven, they will have to appear before a duly appointed court of racial antecedents. And they'll have to show that all their grandpapas and grandmamas have been completely Aryan for 4 entire generations before their music will again be permitted to make itself heard in the concert halls of the old city on the not-so-very-blue Danube. Most of us shall never again drink our endless cups of coffee along the pleasant banks of the Salzach. The lovely villages of that lovely land will have a great many visitors, for the eager-eyed boys and girls of Kraft durch Freude, together with their Leberwurst and Pumpernickel, they will now be turned loose upon those villages. All of which is very sad for those of us who love that pleasant little country where good manners were not regarded as an evidence of a deplorable lack of true Teutonic virility, and where charm was cultivated, I fear me, at the expense of many other qualities more necessary in the sort of world which is the sort of world in which the Austrians from now on will have to spend their days. And I suppose that those of us who remember that old Austrian world, when we meet, we shall grow very sentimental and we shall address very uncomplimentary but totally futile remarks at the address of the now divinely inspired son of the old royal and imperial apostolic customs officer who is responsible for so many of our present-day worries. And what good will it do us? About as much good as weeping over a Confederate battle flag. So let's forget it. It was very delightful and charming while it lasted. Glad we saw it. Now it has come to an end. And through whose fault? Now I hate to say it, but the fault was ours and no one else's. Facts are facts and facts remain facts, however unpleasant they may happen to be. Now I shall not talk to you very much longer, for I've got to go back to my real job, and that is to write books. But when I began this series, I set myself the task of warning you of certain very serious dangers that are threatening our country. It has not been a very comfortable duty, but it was a necessary one, and so it had to be done. Other people outside the Third Reich also sometimes happen to love the country in which they live, without using every occasion to express their deep contempt for those who are of a different race. And other peoples also sometimes believe in the institutions which have made their countries what they are and are willing to fight for them, also without quite so much noise. And therefore, seeing our country hopelessly adrift upon a vast ocean of indifference, a rudderless vessel at the mercy of the first pirate eager to board it, some of us considered it our duty to try and awaken our easygoing neighbors to those perils that threaten them from so many sides. So whatever happens, I have done my duty as I saw it, and that's that. I couldn't do more than that. Now, a moment ago, I asked you whose faults are the events of the last 14 days in the last 4 years. Why is Austria gone, and why is Adolf Hitler where he is? Austria is gone, and Hitler is where he is because we ourselves willed it so. We ourselves let Austria perish, and we ourselves made Hitler an unavoidable incident in the history of the German people. There was a time when the old German Republic still had a chance, and a very fair chance. And what did we do? we left the future of these two democracies, Germany and Austria, to the mercies of those who succeeded, the vengeful old man of Versailles. Politicians with the visions of a mole, and who resembled the mole in still other ways as they lived and worked underground, intent upon their own little interest, most of them mean, shifty little politicians who thought rarely beyond the confines of the electoral bailiwick that was supposed to keep them in power and their henchmen in comfort. Here and there, of course, a few exceptions. Here and there, a noble figure arose who sincerely believed that reason and decency would make an end to economic distress and that gangsters could be cured of their bad habits by an eloquent appeal to their better nature. Poor Ramsay MacDonald and poor Briand, poor Stresemann, their intentions were of the best. Their oratory was unsurpassed, but I'm glad for them that they died before they saw this brutal collapse of all they'd worked for with such earnest zeal. Do you remember, but who does, the first time there was a question of an economic alliance between Germany and Austria? It was a perfectly normal arrangement. It was more than that. It was an unavoidable natural development. That was in the days of the old German Republic. It would not only have been a sensible thing to do, but it would have greatly encouraged the German Republic. It would have been a feather in the cap of that much harassed Republic. It might even have saved it from the disaster that since then has overtaken it. But no, London and Paris wouldn't hear of it, and Washington, remembering the treatment it had received from London and Paris after its help in the Great War, Washington insisted upon complete isolation. You can't blame them. The influence of the vengeful old man of Versailles was still too strong. What could then have been done in peaceful and decent manner was prevented by all the many means at the disposal of London and Paris, and the poor old German Republic had to be tortured and harassed and bothered and plagued and humiliated until the German people were forced by us, by their conquerors, to take a desperate remedy and to swallow the doctrine of the National Socialist Party in order that they might survive. For this remedy offered the only hope for salvation. So hate Hitler if you must, and hate all the sins he stands for, but remember, it was you yourself who put him where he is. Weep tears upon the memory of old Austria, but remember that we ourselves destroyed the old Austria. Hitler merely brought to a successful conclusion what we ourselves had begun. And therefore, and I cannot repeat this often enough, please don't waste your time hating this little man with a futile hatred. For hatred is a negative quality, and besides, it's bad for your blood pressure, as any doctor will tell you. By hating him, you accomplish nothing, but eventually your own destruction. He won't weep. But by understanding him, you may live to see the collapse of what he is now building up in such feverish haste. For somehow or other, I still stick to that prophecy of mine I made several weeks ago and about which so many people have doubts. I still see his career as a speeded-up film of the career of Napoleon Bonaparte or any man like that. What took 15 years in the horse and buggy days of Napoleon will be reduced to about a year in the case of the dictator of Germany and Austria. For he moves at the rate of speed of flying machines and machine gun bullets. And those two flying machines and machine gun bullets are very apt to backfire at the most unexpected moment and to destroy those who intended to use them to their own advantage. And now, here's another point. The point I have made, or at least I have tried to make it. I've tried to make this point through all my broadcasts. Through all those broadcasts, which I repeated again, had but one single purpose. To make at least a few people realize the dangers that threaten us. I don't say I'm not war-mongering or once war-scaring, but the other dangers that eventually may lead us to the war. And I purposely say a few people. I can make a few people realize it. For the great majority of our people, far removed from it and far removed from Europe, they're still completely indifferent. That indifference is for a great part the result of our system of education. For our system of education, as it is given to the average boy and girl, it seems to take democracy for granted. And since it takes democracy for granted, it therefore teaches our dear little children, that since they have had the great and good and marvelous fortune to have been born in a democracy, which is the ultimate end of perfection in government. Jersey papers might copy this. They really need not worry about the future or about taking a very intelligent or a very deep interest in the ordinary, everyday affairs of their own country. Now I know of few fallacies that have done quite as much harm to our country or any other country that ever believed it. I know of very few fallacies that are as dangerous as this endlessly repeated assertion that a democracy is the final end of all government and that our democracy is the best of all. I know and I agree that a democracy may be the final ideal of all government, and I am not debating that point just now. A democracy may be the most desirable form of government, but at the same time, a democracy is by far the most artificial political, social, and economic arrangement that has ever been constructed by the ingenuity of men. And it is apt to be so delicately adjusted that it has survived on only the rarest of occasions. The entire record of history looks like one long road into the past, on both sides of which we can observe the moss-grown wrecks of hundreds of democracies that fell by the wayside. Many of these, if we were quite true about it, quite honest, they never even had been democracies in the true sense of the word, for we still seem to be under the impression that any form of government that didn't have a king or an emperor or a dictator must therefore have been a democracy, and nothing is further from the truth. Many kingdoms were and are today better democracies than so-called free republics like old Venice and Genoa and the United Seven Netherlands and that incredible Polish Republic of the 17th and 18th century, which was merely a system of organized anarchy. They were merely called republics because the families which ruled them could never agree which one of them should be entrusted with the supreme power. I will even go so far now as to claim that a democratic form of government is so utterly against the basic laws of nature, for nobody has ever yet accused nature of believing in liberty and equality, I go so far as to say that only and the greatest and the most constant sort of care will allow a democratic form of government, which is decidedly against the basic laws of nature, to survive. But when is that point mentioned? You never hear it, it's never stressed, except perhaps in a roundabout way on the 4th of July or some other occasion, devoted to the conventional sort of patriotism, when you hear speeches to which nobody pays the slightest attention, that everybody knows that nobody means them. And the rest of our years, and the rest of the days, we take our democracy for granted, just as our children take their magnificent schoolhouses and their free education for granted. And in both cases, the final results are exactly the same: indifference, contempt, and a complete lack of interest. And then the thing collapses one day, and we wake up, and we feel that we've been harshly treated. And we say, why, this is terrible. Why did this happen to us? And invariably, there is only one answer. It happened to us because we ourselves wanted it to happen. Good night.
And so the well-known author and philosopher, Hendrik Willem van Loon, sums up some of the matters on which he has been talking to you during the last 4 months. He'll have more to say to you on some of these questions next week. This is the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City.